The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, July 8th, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports I Own College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and the deadline for underclassmen to withdraw from the 2021 NBA draft came and went last night. It was a great night for UCLA. Johnny Juzang, who led the Bruins to the Final Four last season, announced that he is returning to Westwood for at least one more season. So that means every player who was a part of UCLA's Final Four run is back. Johnny Juzang, Jaime Jaquez, Jules Bernard, Tiger Campbell, Cody Riley. It's five double-digit scores from a Final Four team all returning. Meantime, the Bruins are adding five-star wing Peyton Watson and Rutgers transfer Miles Johnson, the latter of whom, you know, averaged 8 points and 8.5 rebounds for the Scarlet Knights last season. Mick Cronin is locked and loaded dead leg. I got the Bruins second in the top 25 and one behind only Gonzaga. Do you have a sense for how close to that you might have UCLA if you were dumb enough to spend your time ranking teams 50 million different times during the offseason?
Yeah, what'd you do to yourself there, by the way? Like, you know, a few years back, we came up with the idea, which has benefited, no doubt, of you updating the top 25 and one every morning during the season. And it's become a necessary evil, but it also, it brings a lot of attention to the site. People love rankings. Frankly, gives you endless amounts of agita, I'm sure, every single day with fan bases that you grow to hate more and more. But now, I mean, you're updating your rankings like three times a week. Now, maybe we're going to hit a lull spot here, but you did it to yourself.
My rule is that on the night of the national championship game, I post a preseason top 25 and one for the next season, obviously, with projections just based on conversations I've had with coaching staffs, agents, NBA people, surveying mock drafts, who is likely to enter the draft and remain in it, who is likely to return to school. And I acknowledge up front, some of this is not going to be right. It's a projection made in early April. But it's cool because it's going to be mostly right. It always is. Every time I post that on the night of the national championship game, people say, well, you can't possibly do that. And I'm like, you can possibly do it. It won't be exactly right, but it'll be pretty close. Your guesses are educated guesses on who's coming, who's going. And they'll mostly be right, and then you adjust when you need to adjust. So after that moment, and that's version 1.0, and then after that moment, every time a player does something that runs counter to my current rankings and projections in a way that will impact the rankings, I update. Here's version 2.0. Here's version 3.0. Here's version 4.0. And I think at this point we are up to version 17.0 after Aaron Wiggins announced that he is going to remain in the NBA draft and not return to Maryland. I had to adjust for that. I adjusted for that, dropped Maryland down to wherever I dropped Maryland, I think number 17. But Johnny Juzang's decision did not have any impact on UCLA because I always assumed he would be back in school. But we're at version 17.0 and we could reach, we still got plenty of transfers who have to announce their destinations. I don't think it's crazy to think we could reach version 25.0 by the time it's ready to play basketball.
I feel like an Aaron Wiggins decision is worth like a 17.2. But if you want to keep going up 0.0, you do what you got to do. Here's the deal, though. I intentionally have not looked at your offseason rankings. I have the very first one, okay? I'm not going to look at these until we get to basically the podcast like a few days before the start of the season, okay? I have your 1.0 in a Google document. The very first one you did the night of the title game, the day after the title game, we released it. Okay? I'm going to go on the day before the season starts. We're going to compare your final preseason ranking from your first one, just for fun, to see how much has changed. Now, don't go back and look at it between then. I was going to surprise you with this in November, but I'm letting the cat out of the bag now. So we're going to see just how much can change in an entire offseason, beginning to end, 1.0 versus 23.0 or wherever the hell we're going to be, you know, on November 6th.
Fired up. And you know what? I don't think it'll change that much. Off the top of my head, Texas has improved itself. Kentucky has improved itself. Alabama has damaged itself. But for the most part, like, I'm looking at version 17.0 right now. Like, I think I had Gonzaga number 2 on that first night.
Yes.
And now Gonzaga's number 1. I had UCLA number 1. Now UCLA's number 2. You know, Michigan, Duke, Baylor, they were all always supposed to be up there. It's different, but it's not as different as people like to insist it's going to be on the night that you post the initial version.
Well, it will be interesting, and we'll get into some of those teams in a little bit here regarding player decisions, both on Wednesday, which is right up against the deadline for the NCAA stay or go, and then earlier in the week. But let's focus on Juzang and UCLA for a minute here. It is a bit interesting that we've landed at this point. Now, you always had Juzang coming back. The day after that UCLA lost in the Final Four, I believe that Juzang was going to go because I felt like his stock was never going to be higher than what it was coming off of just an absurd NCAA tournament performance. I mean, he's a vintage example of a player who stepped up, balled out, increased his, not just his NBA stock, but just, you know, the general sports fan now knows who Johnny Juzang is because he plays for a blue blood program that made a Final Four run, and he had moments of just absolute absurdity in the tournament, and that was awesome. And oh, by the way, really gutted it out down the stretch there, playing on a tender ankle. Now, quite obviously, the past few months of the pre-draft process did not provide him with enough feedback that would give him enough confidence that he wanted to go to the NBA. Now, whether or not, like, I think there's a chance he could have been selected late second round, but he did not play himself into first round status, which there was some, you know, free and loose talk after the NCAA tournament run that he had turned himself into that. He had a wonderful season, an amazing late February all the way into March, but his return quite obviously sets him up to be a preseason first team All-American. But you get back Cody Riley as well. You mentioned Peyton Watson. UCLA has a really, really good team. Jaime Jaquez, I think, will be terrific as well. I mean, he's right there with Johnny Juzang, I think, overall in terms of how valuable he'll be next season. So you and I would not doubt Mick Cronin to get UCLA back to the summit or close to the summit of the sport with or without Johnny Juzang, but it is great to have him back, and I'll extrapolate on this a little more in the pod, but it did feel as though this time around, college basketball players of some note that you don't even have to be a diehard fan of the sport. If you just kind of watched here and there, January, February, March, and you're just kind of, you know, you're into college basketball, even if you're not an absolute fanatic about it. We had a good number of players choose to return to the sport, which is a really good thing. The biggest among those players, though, at least the most well-known, I would argue would be either Johnny Juzang or potentially Kofi Coburn, who we'll get into a little bit here. That's a really good thing and a great thing for UCLA. You've got him, too. You asked where you think I'd have him. I don't know yet. I mean, I won't truly assemble that ranking stuff, my research for that, until, you know, late September, early October. I'll definitely have UCLA top 5, no doubt about it. I do know that I really like what Kansas has now. It's built up a pretty impressive roster, and we still have to wait on transfer stuff with them. But I think UCLA has to universally be regarded, GP. I would say universally regarded as a preseason top 5 team, and that is obviously not something that has been all that common for such a proud program. For most of the past 25 years, UCLA has not entered the season most. It has a couple of years, but for the most part, it doesn't enter a season as a top 5 team in the nation. That will definitely be the case when we get to November.
The point you make about Johnny Juzang being recognizable even to casual fans, I think, is important for the sport. You know, Luka Garza returned for last season and was going to be the consensus unanimous preseason National Player of the Year, but he wasn't coming off of some incredible NCAA tournament run. He was just coming off of an incredible season at Iowa. Most people who don't follow college basketball did not know who he was. Yeah, I remember talking to my friend and colleague Jeff Calkins, who's a longtime columnist with the Daily Memphian. And he was like, I don't know who Luka Garza is. You know, I was just curious, like, do you know who Luka Garza is? Like, if I say Luka Garza, does that matter to you? This was in advance of last season. He was about to be the consensus National Player of the Year preseason. Jeff was like, I don't know. And I don't think that was unusual. Like, he just wasn't well known outside of the sport. What's interesting about this year is we've got the top, at least according to my top 25 and one, the two top teams, Gonzaga and UCLA. They're both coming off Final Fours. And they're both returning, in theory, arguably, the best player from those Final Four teams. For Gonzaga, Drew Timmy, and for UCLA, Johnny Juzang. They're if not probably, at least possibly both going to be preseason first-team All-Americans. There's no question with Drew Timmy, maybe Johnny Juzang. We can argue that later. But that's really key for the sport, to be getting guys that people know, that people watch throughout March and early April play, to be getting those guys back is, again, it's not a normal thing for the sport, but it's going to be a thing heading into this season. Another thing that's not normal for the sport of college basketball is to return five double-digit scorers from a Final Four team, or have five starters back from a Final Four team. I would trivia time you, but I didn't know even how to start looking that up as I was prepping for this late last night. But I bet you're not going to find many examples in modern history where a Final Four team returned five double-digit scorers or five starters. Billy Donovan's Florida program is an obvious example. After the 2006 season,
yes,
they return, you know, their entire starting lineup, five double-digit scorers, and they go on to win their second straight national championship in 2007. Joakim Noah, Torian Green, Corey Brewer, Al Horford, Lee Humphrey. So that's an example. But returning five starters and five double-digit scores from a Final Four team is not something that happens often in this era. And I've been ranking UCLA very high, again, since the night of the national championship game. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say or read people tweeting, you know, if UCLA would have lost to Michigan State in the first four, you wouldn't even have them ranked. I hear it all the time. I see it all
not
the time.
Not ranked?
What people say. That's my initial point. First off, that's not true. If UCLA would have returned its entire team that made the NCAA tournament, like it's doing, I would have had UCLA ranked even if it lost to Michigan State in the first four. So when people say that, they're simply wrong. But more than that, it's just a dumb thing to say. Like, how do you start an argument with somebody by saying, if this team would not have done the thing that it 100% did, you think differently about this team? Like, what? Oh, okay, sure, I guess. But that goes for literally every team in the history of teams. You know, would Baylor be remembered as the best team in college basketball last season if it hadn't beaten Gonzaga? Imagine starting an argument with somebody going, the only reason you think Baylor was the best team in the country last season is because it won the national championship and beat Gonzaga. Well, yeah, you got me. That is exactly why I think that, because they beat Gonzaga in the title game and won the championship. It doesn't even make sense right to me, that argument. But also beyond that, it's not that UCLA just got hot, because I think this is what that's rooted in. UCLA just got hot in the NCAA tournament. Now you're overreacting to that. It's not just that UCLA got hot and made the Final Four, although I acknowledge UCLA did undeniably get hot and make the Final Four. The Bruins also finished 13th at KenPom. They finished 13th at KenPom. So, yeah, they were an 11th seed in the NCAA tournament. I got it. But when all of the data was collected and after everything was done, KenPom labeled UCLA as one of the best 13 teams in college basketball last season. And where in the world are you supposed to rank a team that finishes 13th at KenPom, returns everybody, and adds a five-star freshman and a rotation player from a Big Ten team that made the round of 32 in the NCAA tournament? If you want to say UCLA should be number five instead of number two, or number three, or number four instead of number two, fine, like whatever. But there is nothing crazy about having UCLA, based on Johnny Juzang's return and the return of everybody else, there's nothing crazy about having UCLA number two heading into next season. And that's the only point I've ever tried to make.
Yeah, I think I said a few minutes ago, I would say they should be universally regarded as a preseason top five team. That doesn't guarantee they're going to be in the top five once we get to March, but I think it's only objectively fair to evaluate them like that, also taking into account the teams that would have ended the season, top 10 level, what they do or do not bring back. If you have concerns about UCLA, you could point to the defense because they definitely had some issues with that last season. I would say Mick Cronin's history has strongly leaned to him being a quality defensive coach. We're improved last season versus his first season with UCLA. I would expect him to be even better again next season on defense while maintaining, you know, a top 15 level offense, I would think. As for Juzang specifically and him returning, I think the other question is, will he continue to ascend? Because I got to imagine that he and his family really had a long discussion about doing this. Now, I do think he's got a wonderful, I think he is an ideal candidate for a player, you know, All-American fringe draft pick playing in a big school who can now profit off of NIL. Like, if I'm Johnny Juzang, I have to imagine that Juzang and his family and representatives had discussions about where there could be areas for him to make some serious money this upcoming season. And by serious money, obviously I'm talking like at least six figures. The star player at UCLA on a Final Four team that's coming back, I think he'll have really good opportunities. And I'd be interested to know from Johnny, and someone's going to ask this to him soon, I would think, or by, you know, the preseason media day at the latest. Like, if the NIL stuff wasn't in place, would you have gone to the NBA? Yes or no? And if the answer was, if there was no NIL, I was going to the NBA, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. But aside from all that, will he continue to ascend and be a quality player? Because he did bring his game up a significant notch in the tournament. Remember, he was a non-factor at Kentucky after entering at Lexington as a heralded recruit. And then last season, he really gained steam as the season went along. And then it went to another level once he got to the NCAA tournament. As a reminder, 23, 27, 17, 13, 28, 29 points. Those were his game totals once we got to the postseason. Prior to that, here's what they were: 9, 12, 18, 25, 6, a DNP, and then 12. He was a good player. He just wasn't the supernova that he was on the stage of the NCAA tournament. So will he take that next step? If he does, that's the biggest reason. I think that he will, and that's why I would list UCLA somewhere in my preseason top five.
In the regular season, Johnny Juzang averaged, or for the entire season, rather, he averaged 16 points, 4.1 rebounds, 1.6 assists. In the NCAA tournament, he averaged 22.8 points. And he shot 50.9% from the field and 37.5% from three. He took it to another level in those last two games, which is where, because I remember it a little differently than it actually is. I remember Johnny Juzang just being awesome throughout the entire NCAA tournament. Like, that's not really true. He got 13 points in the Sweet 16 win over Alabama. It wasn't like he just dominated every game. But those last two games he played, 28 points on 19 shots in an Elite Eight win over Michigan, and then 29 points on 18 shots in that Final Four loss to Gonzaga. Those are the ones that, you know, made it where you don't have to be a college basketball fan to know who that dude is. The point you make about name, image, and likeness being a thing now and possibly playing a role in his return, I think can't be overstated. Like, when I talk to NBA people in recent weeks, especially after the combine, they were like, Johnny Juzang is not a first-round pick. He might not be a second-round pick. He's a two-way player, you know, who probably spends most of next season in the G League if he wants to be a professional in this country. And given that reality, maybe in a different time you go, okay, fine, two-way player. I'll take it. Let's go. I'm going to bounce between a G League team and an NBA franchise. I'll be making a paycheck. I'm fine with that. But right now, I think you're right. Johnny Juzang can probably make more money playing at UCLA than he can playing anywhere else in this country next season. So it makes the decision, or at least it would for me, it makes it a little easier. When you are weighing, because this is a point I've made forever, if you are a college star at a prominent program who doesn't project as an NBA star at the next level, you will never have the responsibility on a basketball court again that you have right now. In other words, Johnny Juzang heading into this season is going to be perceived as the best player on one of the best teams in the country, playing largely in front of sold-out arenas and on national television. He'll never have that again. He'll never be the best player on his team again after he leaves UCLA, unless it's at a level below the NBA. I think that's a reasonable thing to suggest. So, man, if I'm telling you, do you want to play in empty G League arenas or packed Pac-12 arenas? Do you want to play on no television or national television, you know, nearly every game? Like, if you're weighing all these options, what you want to be, just another dude on a team or the best player on a team who gets all the shots? Like, these things are all leaning one direction. Like, I want to play college basketball. That sounds a lot more fun. The thing that twists it back the other direction, it has often been, but I can make money doing it over there. I can make money being the seventh best player on a team at the professional level. Okay, but now you can make money legitimately as the best team on as the best player on a college team. And I think that probably matters. My question, and we're going to find this out, you know, everybody thinks they know, but it's impossible to know until we live through it and see. Are you better off, because on one hand you'd go, man, Johnny Juzang, best player at UCLA in a market like Los Angeles. Woo, what kind of money he's going to make? And perhaps we'll find out a whole lot, or not as much as you'd think. We'll see. But I'm interested to find out, where are you best positioned to actually cash in on your NIL rights? Is it in a market like LA, or is it in a market like Lawrence, Kansas? You know, if we're talking about NBA players, you'd rather be in the big market than the small market. But if you're Johnny Juzang and you're trying to cash in strictly on name, image, and likeness in Los Angeles, yes, you're the star basketball player at UCLA. But you're not LeBron James. You're not Anthony Davis. You're not Kawhi Leonard. You're not Paul George. You're not Mookie Betts. You know, like, there's a lot of things you're not in that market. You're way down the list. Whereas, you know, in East Lansing, you're the biggest deal in that region. What is more profitable, to be in a major market where you're not as important, or to be in a college town where you're the biggest thing in that area? I'm not sure. But either way, we can both understand that Johnny Juzang is going to earn legitimate money in his next season at UCLA. And you got to think that was at least a factor in his decision to return to UCLA, which is just another great thing about name, image, and likeness rights. Beyond the fact that it's right and good, it also can help these sports keep borderline draft picks in school a year longer, because you don't have to leave anymore if your goal is strictly to earn a legitimate paycheck.
So Juzang was the biggest decision on Wednesday. We would agree with that. But there were a lot of other bigger decisions. You want to get into the list and refresh our listeners on the names to know that are coming back and ones that are gone for good?
Yeah, we'll bounce through those names here in just a second. But first, check this out. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
So Johnny Juzang wasn't the only significant player to withdraw from the NBA draft in recent days. Deadleg, run us through the other dudes who matter to the sport.
All right. This is most of the names, I won't say all the names, that decided this week, essentially, for the most part. I'll start with the guys that are gone because there's very few. And normally this is how it goes, but I did feel like the number was smaller. So Jose Alvarado leaving Georgia Tech, he's gone. Aaron Wiggins, as you mentioned, leaving Maryland, he's gone. The most impactful decision this week for a player that's gone that was considered somewhere in the 45-55, 50-50, 55-40 range would be Jason Preston, who got Ohio to the NCAA tournament. Really nice passer. He is gone. He had a workout with the Lakers on Wednesday and decided after that that this is indeed where he was going. He will get drafted. Interesting prospect overall. Those are the only three players in recent days that were considered on the fence-ish who are not returning to college basketball. Everyone else I'm about to tell you right now is coming back. Here are the players that are coming back and are going to come back to the programs that they were playing at last season. The biggest one that's coming back and for sure playing at the program he was last season, Hunter Dickinson. Remind the listeners, where do you have Michigan right now?
I believe fifth in the top 25 and one. Let me double check that. Yes, Wolverines fifth. They bring back Hunter Dickinson, Eli Brooks, and then Juwan Howard is enrolling the number one recruiting class in the entire country.
Indeed, he is. Hunter Dickinson, no doubt about it, will have a case to be a preseason first team All-American. Him returning to Michigan, I think, is a big deal because not just of his skill. I mean, listen, I think he'll have a chance to really grow as a sophomore here, but you play at Michigan, you play in the Big Ten, you want to talk about a player that's going to be among the five or six biggest names in the sport next season. I do think Hunter Dickinson will be one of those. Whether or not he's a top five player, I think he'll be a top five, six, seven name overall because I think he'll be a major factor on a national championship contending team. So he's coming back. We talked about L.A. Isaiah Mobley is going to return to USC while obviously his brother Evan, who we featured on a draft profile pod, he's going to be a top five pick, so he's obviously gone. But Isaiah Mobley returns to the LA area for USC. That's a really nice boon for the Trojans there. Also in the Pac-12, here was a genuinely surprising one. Surprising so much that the staff here at CBS Sports, we've been putting together some draft stuff and for later this month and on draft night, and we have to do like these little capsules on strengths and weaknesses. And I was assigned Marcus Bagley's. So I hit up Bobby Hurley like last week, and we just were kind of talking on Bagley and how his game will translate to the pros and all this kind of stuff. I thought he was gone. I just didn't think that he was coming back. And so I think he was the most surprising decision of the past 24, 48, 72 hours, one way or the other, the fact that he not only came back, he's going to play at Arizona. Something weird happened there, by the way. Just real quick on this. Like, he actually was coming back, right? And then it was like he's going to be in the transfer portal. And then 4 hours later, he's staying at Arizona State. But that's a big deal. I think he's actually got – he could be – the player who was like a quality player last year, GP, but if he gets stuff done that he needs to and grows, we could look up in February, and if you told me that Bagley was like a top three Pac-12 player of the year candidate, I would believe it. Just want quick thoughts on him because I thought his decision was certainly significant because of the fact that not only he's returning, but returning to an Arizona State program that could really use him.
No, most people thought, you know, he's probably staying in the draft. But if he's not staying in the draft, then he's going to return to college and transfer from Arizona State. And instead, he decides to withdraw from the draft and return to Arizona State. Obviously, something changed there. I'm not interested in speculating on it, but I will remind you that name, image, and likeness rights is a thing right now. And it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if somebody sat down with him and said, do you know how much money you can make legally by returning to Arizona State for one more year of college basketball? And those conversations, I would assume, can be eye-opening. I mean, we just saw a situation with Miami football. Do you see this story?
Oh, yeah.
A booster is promising every scholarship player $500 a month. You know, hey, here's a contract, $500 a month. I'm not just picking the starting quarterback or the starting or the best wide receiver. Everybody, if you're on scholarship, you could contract's on the table for you, $500 a month. And that might not sound like much to somebody, but think about this. For decades, like the big scandal in college sports has been like, ooh, I wonder if that booster got him a car. Did you ever hear that booster got him a car? Well, $500 a month is a car. You know, it's a nice car. I mean, now we just got boosters saying, I'll give everybody a car. If you're on scholarship at Miami to play football, bring back the U. Like, this is going to be a thing. I love it. And I wouldn't not be surprised if somebody made it very clear to Marcus Bagley, there is real, you'll make more money playing college basketball next season than you'll play, than you'll make playing basketball at the professional level, whatever level, next season. And what's more fun? To be, again, one of the best players, if not the best player, on a team in the Pac-12, or just being a guy on another team somewhere below the NBA level. You know, Hunter Dickinson mentioned this as a factor in his decision to return to Michigan. I don't know that it's true, completely true in every case where somebody says it, because Hunter Dickinson, like, if we're just being honest, he can say, yeah, name, image, and likeness rights is a real reason I came back. And you go, okay, I believe you. But, like, another reason is, like, were you going to be picked?
Right. It's a way of shielding that. No doubt. You can shield your reality of, like, what your chances of actually getting picked were. It's a convenient thing now. It'll be true in some cases, but I hear what you're getting at.
Yeah, no, I know. I think it's true in some cases. And I do think it tilts the seesaw, if you will, in some cases. Like, okay, they're telling me I might get picked in the 50s, but maybe not at all, and definitely not in the first round. But, you know, I can still end up in the G League and make a paycheck. And okay, yeah, you could do that. And in different years, you might, but you could make a bigger paycheck playing college basketball. Just play college basketball and be awesome. I do think it's a factor. Is it the largest factor for some of these players? Maybe not, but I do think it's a factor. And that's another great thing for college basketball. We've been talking for years. How do we keep the borderline draft picks in school? We don't have to keep Zion Williamson in school. That's absurd to think that you could. You don't have to keep Ja Morant in school another year. It's absurd to think that you could. But can you keep Jared Harper in school? Like, that's the guy you should be able to keep in school. And with name, image, and likeness rights now a reality, it appears to me what we found out with this draft is you can keep the Jared Harpers in school. A lot of Jared Harpers, if you will, stayed in school this season.
Yeah, that's a really good thing for college basketball. I mean, I got a few more names to get to you here that I think, you know, it's. I'll say this before I get to the rest of these names. I will say this, GP. I wonder if you agree with this. So, in many off seasons, be it right after the Final Four ends, or when we're, you know, compiling our list of a top 101 players in the sport, or just doing general preseason stuff, there's always interesting players, really good players returning, but there have been some off-seasons, certainly in the past decade, where I've looked and I've been like I remember sometimes we'd make our top 101, and by the time we got to like even like 28, 29, 30 on the list, while they were good players, I'm like, man, is this dude really, like, is he really going to be the 27th best player in college basketball? Is that what the sport's going to be this season? I'm on the other side of this season. I think we've got a lot of really good, compelling talent, and that will translate then to, maybe similarly you would have an opinion on this, where when you make your preseason top 25 rankings and you get to, like, I remember sitting with you after Final Fours in years past where we would be at like 22, 23. I'd be like, this team is disgusting. Like, this team has no business being in the top 25 heading into the season. Then once you play it out, like, it all certainly makes sense. To me, like, it feels like with these guys returning, there really is, like, you know, 35, 36, 37 teams that have a case for top 25 status. Would you agree generally with what I'm putting out there for you?
Yes. In most years, I get to 23 or something like that, and I go, all right, I got to get to 26. How do I get there? This year, I can honestly tell you, like, I don't have a problem getting to 26. I feel sometimes like I've left a worthy team out. Like, I've got roster breakdowns of maybe five or six other teams that aren't in the top 25 and one that I feel like could reasonably be ranked if I went to 31 or 32 or 33. But I'm leaving those teams off right now because I had to cut as opposed to stretch. And I think the same thing when it comes to putting together a list of players or All-America teams. How about this? Trivia time.
Okay.
Act excited when I say trivia time. You used to. In the beginning, you would get excited at those words.
Let's do it.
In the beginning, you would get excited with those words, but now you seem less enthusiastic.
I'm enthusiastic. Let's go.
Trivia time.
Okay.
We put together a first team, second team, and third team All-America team at the end of last season, 15 players. Four of those players are back in college. That's not normal. Like, in some years, it's one. Maybe two.
And who are they?
That's the trivia time.
I know.
Name the four players who were on who were among the 15 players on our All-America teams last season who are back in school?
Kofi Coburn.
That's a correct answer.
Remy Martin.
Incorrect answer.
Incorrect. We did not have Remy that high.
Kofi Coburn, by the way, was second team.
Did we have Drew Timmy third team?
First team.
Last year.
Remember, we do this in advance of the Final Four, but after the Elite Eight, and Drew Timmy through that NCAA tournament was clearly Gonzaga's best player.
I crossed my wires there. Yep. Okay. All right. So we're at two, and I need two more. We went with. Did we go with? We had to go with Juzang at that point.
We didn't. I told you he wasn't. Like his big like game. Like he was not good in the Elite Eight. He only had 13 points, and then he had the big. He had the big, or he was not great in the Sweet 16, and then he was great in the Elite Eight, and then great in the Final Four. But we stopped. We did this just before he had the big game against Gonzaga.
All right,
I was actually surprised when I went back and looked at it last night that Juzang wasn't first.
All right,
and second
I know defensive. One of them for sure is Asemus. We put Asemus third team, did we not?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Okay. So we need one more. That's returning that we had as an All-American. That's back. Give me. Is this gettable?
Yes, we've already talked about this player
on this podcast.
Yes,
Dickinson.
That's right. Dickinson was third team. The four players who were our CBS Sports All-Americans last season who are going to be back in school: Drew Timmy, Gonzaga, first team; Kofi Coburn. We don't know where he's playing.
I'll get to that.
But he was a second-team All-American. Like, it ain't often you can get a second-team All-American in the transfer portal, but here we are. Hunter Dickinson was third team. Max Asemus was third team. And that was another significant decision from Wednesday night. Max Asemus withdrawing from the NBA draft. He averaged 24.5 points for Oral Roberts last season. I remember you and I talking about it in advance of putting together these All-American teams. Like, it's very easy to be dismissive of somebody scoring like that at the mid-major level. Whether you should be dismissive of it or not, it's very easy to go, doing that against these schools for that school. What does it really matter? But then you see him go to the Sweet 16. He gets 29 points in a win over Ohio State, 26 in a win over Florida, 25 in a Sweet 16 loss to Arkansas. And you go, okay, well, it turns out this guy could do this against anybody. And that is why he started to get, you know, some first round buzz connected to his name. And Chad Ford tweeted this last night. I don't know if you saw this, longtime NBA draft analyst. He said Max Asemus got some first round buzz after a huge NCAA tournament, but his stock came crashing down to earth at the combine, where he measured small, tested as the worst athlete among guards, and struggled with his shot in the 5-on-5. So I'm assuming he got, you know, the feedback that suggests you're not quite ready to play in this league right now. And, oh, by the way, you might not ever be, you know, we'll see, but you might not ever be. You know, if you test unathletically and you're little, it's hard to overcome at the NBA level. So we'll see. But that doesn't mean he can't be a great college player. And if I were putting together a first-team All-American preseason team, Max Asemus from Oral Roberts would be one of my guards. Do you like? If I were putting together an All-American team right now, because I did it last night. Okay. And I struggle with the final spot or so, but here's what I would do: Max Asemus, Oral Roberts at one guard, Johnny Juzang, UCLA at another guard, Paolo Banchero at Duke would be on my team. Drew Timmy, a Gonzaga, would be on my team, and he'd be the preseason National Player of the Year. And then I think Kofi Coburn, who is to be determined, but that has me leaving off Hunter Dickinson, and that's obviously tough. But just like we were talking about earlier, like I'm not having to stretch to find the five players. I'm having to cut really good guys. Some other names that I think could reasonably be considered as I was just sort of bouncing through rosters: Colin Gillespie, Villanova; Remy Martin, Kansas; Andrew Jones, Texas; Kellen Grady at Kentucky; EJ Liddell, Ohio State; mm-hmm. Kyle Lofton, St. Bonaventure; Trevion Williams, Purdue,
yeah.
Armando Bacot, North Carolina, Keve Aluma, Virginia Tech, again, Hunter Dickinson, Michigan, Chet Holmgren at Gonzaga. A lot of either really interesting prospects or already established, experienced, you know, accomplished, you know, veteran in, you know, college basketball players. Like there's some interesting college basketball talent returning to college basketball next season. I don't want to say I'm ready for the season because I'm not. I'm ready for another vacation.
You are not ready for the season.
But
no shot.
I'm looking forward to the season. How about this? I can't wait to go on another vacation and lay there and think about the season.
Okay. Well, if you want to do that, knock yourself out. I will change this right now. This is early straw poll. One person straw poll. I'm not going to put Coburn there because I don't know where he's playing. But give me Dickinson, Timmy. I love Trevion Williams for next season. Yep. Hold me to it. I will put him on my preseason first team. And then I guess Juzang and Gillespie, but I got to think more on that. I Ace Miss is certainly worthy of consideration. That's an early reading on that. But yes, Ace Miss returning. I'm going to get to transfers in a second. The guys who are returning but transferring. But like Ace Miss is a player who, in deciding to return, if he wanted to transfer, we're talking like top three transfer in the country. And he's going to stick it out with Oral Roberts. Big time coup for that program, which will have visions and hopes of returning to the NCAA tournament because he is coming back. Let me read off a few more big time decisions that came down. Another surprising one, not a shock, but relatively surprising because a lot of people thought he was gone, was Terrence Shannon. Mark Adams gets a huge boost. He's going to return to Texas Tech last season. Shannon was a quality player, 12.9 points, 4.0 boards, not a really good shooter. I was told that's basically what it came down to. Needs to improve the shooting, and if he can, he will become an NBA draft pick. There's a shot he could have been picked overall as well, but was going to drift into the 50s if that was the case. He returns. That's big time for Texas Tech. The best 1-2 punch, we got Ron Harper and Geo Baker both back at Rutgers. Do you have Rutgers in your rankings?
I do not.
Okay. I would say that with them returning, probably deserve to be top 30. Are they in that group of 5 to 7 on the outside looking in?
Yes. In fact, there was a time where I did have Rutgers ranked, but then they lost personnel. I know Miles Johnson was one of them.
Yes.
I'm not sure who else, but there was something that happened between version 1.0 and version 17.0 that pushed them a little bit on the wrong side of things.
Both getting Harper and Baker back is big because it's also Rutgers basketball, and Pikel's doing a great job there, but those are two recognizable, really big names in the area, particularly where I live here in the Northeast. If you get them back, big time. Not a surprise, but a good boost for Florida. Colin Castleton, he's another big that's coming. A lot of big men of importance coming back. Colin Castleton, sneaky first-team SEC player next year, in my opinion. Few more that matter. How about we go to the American? Kendrick Davis, know the name. He's going to be huge next year. He had 19 points, 7.6 assists, 4.2 boards last season for SMU. He's returning to SMU. That is arguably as important of a returning decision to a single program. It's on an Ace Miss type level there. So he comes back. Musa Cisse is coming back, but he's going to transfer, if I have that correctly. Right, GP?
That's right. He withdrew from the draft wisely, but is in the transfer portal, and there is no expectation among the people that I've talked with that he's going to return to Memphis. He's going to transfer to another institution.
Tyson Etienne is the other one in the American going back to Wichita State. He could be the league player of the year if it's not Kendrick Davis or someone else, but he's a really, really good player. He decided to come back. And then a couple more. EJ Liddell wasn't yesterday, but decides to come back to Ohio State. Big time for the Buckeyes. They'll remain in your top 25 preseason rankings, as they should. Liddell is a small big, if you will, but that's a significant decision for them after losing Washington. And then Julian Champagny returning to St. John's. And then the other one, returning and staying at the school, Ochai Agbaji goes back to Kansas. Now, I was told that Kansas was expecting Agbaji to either, you know, if he was coming back, he wasn't, you know, coming back to Kansas, or he was going to just stay in the pool. That's not it. I actually think Ochai Agbaji, we could look up in a year here, less than a year, because next year's draft will be June. I think he could, if he really hits next season, we're talking top 15 pick if it all comes together there. Kansas is loaded. I mean, they have Remy Martin coming in, Joseph Yusufu, who played for Drake last season. Abadji comes back. Jalen Wilson is coming back. Christian Brown. McCormick's back. Lightfoot's back. I don't think they will have room. I actually don't think they're going to have room for a scholarship. Now, let me scoot this in and segue to the guys that are coming back or transferring. So one of the most important ones is Remy Martin, who's coming back, transferring from Arizona. He's going to Kansas. The other one that's coming back but transferring that had Kansas on his list is Marcus Carr. I don't think Kansas is going to have the room. Marcus Carr was a high-volume player for a bad Minnesota team. My guess is he'll go to Texas. That's just a guess, but if you made me pick among the few schools he's considering, he is a very, very important, like, he could just be a baller stud next season. So he's coming back, transferring. Other players that are either transferring or maybe transferring, we mentioned Musa Cisse. You've got Ace Miss's teammate, Kevin O'Banner, also very good in that run for Oral Roberts, coming back, transferring. Not this week, but last week, Jaden Shackelford, we mentioned him, Alabama. I think losing him actually dings the Tide. And then two more big men. Dawson Garcia coming back, still considering Marquette. Immense buzz that he's going to go to North Carolina. UNC will be completely intriguing in year one under Hubert Davis. I would think that Garcia is going to go to Carolina. And then lastly, we'll finish up with a huge name here. Kofi Coburn is coming back. But two of his former coaches, assistants at Illinois, Orlando Antigua and Chin Coleman, are now on staff at Kentucky. Kentucky's interesting because it has Oscar Tshiebwe. You can't really, not that you can't, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to play both Coburn and Tshiebwe. Is Coburn going to go to Kentucky? If he does, how does that affect their roster? Will he choose to return and play for his coach, Brad Underwood? Will he go somewhere else? He's in the portal. Completely fascinating decision because he well could be a top five player in the sport next season if he lands in the right spot and continues to produce. So he is coming back. That's a laundry list of guys. A lot of them really, really good. Really good news for college hoops this week with the amount of talent and knowable names in the sport returning. And now as we wait to see where these guys are going to go, plenty of interesting in the portal decisions, but to me, none bigger, more intriguing than what happens with Coburn and whether or not he's going to return to Champaign, go to Lexington, or maybe somewhere else. We'll have to wait and see on that. One quick bit of news, by the way, that came out early Thursday morning. Small thing, but kind of a cool thing. It was announced that there's going to be a Jumpman Invitational. These are all Jordan Brand schools. That's going to be played in Charlotte. The first one is for next year. It's going to start in December of 2022. Men's and women's teams from Michigan, North Carolina, Florida, and Oklahoma have agreed to a three-year contract where those schools will play each other in a round robin year by year by year. So Florida, Michigan, North Carolina, Oklahoma, part of the Jumpman Invitational, another quality non-conference opportunity for college hoops, which I think is pretty good. Yes, it's on a neutral court, but you have big-time schools involved in this in men's and women's basketball. It's a pretty cool, fun deal there for some of the biggest brands in college hoops that will start, again, in 2022.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Harvey Thomas, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listen to the Island College Basketball Podcast, middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, leave a review. Type some nice words. It takes 20 seconds. We sit here and talk about transfers for 50 minutes. Surely you can take 20 seconds and give us a 5-star review and type some nice words. That's all we're asking. Either way, we appreciate you. And we're going to talk to you again real soon. Until then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.